This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Susan Stamberg.
Recalculating. When possible, make a U-turn, then turn left.
Columbus, Indiana shouldn't be that hard to find for a story in NPR's series on destination art.
Told me to turn right.
You just did, but there's the red...
But the small south-central Indiana town, about an hour from Indianapolis and Louisville, a bit longer from Cincinnati, Columbus, Indiana gave Ms. GPS a bit of a challenge. Maybe she's not a fan of architecture.
Arriving at destination on left.
And this town in the middle of soybean country is a mecca of architecture. The greatest designers, I.M. Pei, Eero, and Eliel Saarinen, Cesar Pelli, Richard Meyer, Harry Weese, James Polchek, a veritable who's who of modern masters, have done more than 60 public buildings here. You can see lots of them at NPR.org. The American Institute of Architects rated Columbus, Indiana, 6th in their top 10 list of U.S. cities, right up there with Chicago, New York, San Francisco, the big guys. Amazing for a town with just 44,000 residents.
And there's a little main street that looks like a lot of other main streets, but an old steeple church at one end of it. And now passing another steeple brick church. Lots of brick here.
The modernist buildings, mostly glass and steel and geometric, don't show up right away. Interspersed as they are with old gingerbready 19th century structures. But the National Trust for Historic Preservation has named 6 of the glass and steel ones historic landmarks. And enough people from nearby towns and states, as well as other countries, want to see them that the visitor center gives walking tours.
So you can see you have a solid impact of the building rather than...
Past a looming greenish Henry Moore sculpture that's a treat for wannabe drummers. Moore's arch faces the library I.M. Pei designed in 1969. Brick with nearly invisible mortar. Pei mixed red brick dust into the white mortar to make it blend in. The first modern building in Columbus was the first Christian church, Eliel Saarinen, 1942. Grim and factory-like, tall rectangle of a tower, small rectangles of windows, it launched a local design revolution which World War II put on hold. Then, in the 1960s, because of design-conscious decisions by the biggest business in town, the architectural revolution soared, with schools, fire stations, a bank, all glass. Bonnie and Clyde would have been sitting ducks. A courthouse, city hall, a world-class golf course, a jail, a really attractive jail.
This is Columbus. We don't build anything that isn't attractive.
The force behind that philosophy is the Columbus-based Cummins Diesel Engine Company. One tourist, Vikram Rajadaksha, did land development for Cummins 30 years back. Were they good to work for?
Yeah, they paid their bills. I mean, that's all we looked for. So, and they were they like good stuff.
The good stuff, the new look for this old small town, was the vision of one man, J. Irwin Miller, the longtime head of Cummins. 7 years after his death, Miller's values, expressed here on a company film clip, still inhabit Columbus.
Whatever you do in this world, you've got a responsibility and the privilege of doing it the very best way you can. And whether it's architecture, cooking, or drama, or music, the best is none too good for any of us.
Irwin Miller's son, Will, the youngest of 5, was raised in Columbus. He heads the Lila and DeWitt Wallace Foundation in New York, NPR underwriters, it must be told. Will sits on the Cummins board. We meet in the home where he grew up, a stunning, light-filled 1957 house by Eero Saarinen, the white marble and glass house, which could be a set for madmen but with better ethics, is open to the public by appointment and a $20 ticket. Will Miller says his parents, Irwin and Xenia, had high expectations and standards.
All of us, when we were growing up, had to take piano lessons and practice every day. And one morning, for some reason, my alarm clock went off at 4 a.m, and I didn't pay any attention. I just came out here and started banging on the keyboards, and my father appeared in the doorway over there and said, what are you doing? And I said, practicing, you know, I have to practice. And he said, it's 4 a.m, go to bed. I said, okay, but I've already practiced, right? I don't have to do it again. So.
In the mid-1950s, Will Miller's father launched a program to subsidize public buildings in Columbus, designed by great architects. Great ones because, as Will remembers his father always saying,
mediocrity is expensive.
J. Irwin applied that lesson in building and in business in developing his town.
This was the early 50s. The community was growing with the baby boom so rapidly that it became clear to the school system they would have to build an elementary school every 2 years in order to keep up with the demographics that they could see in the birth rates.
The first school that went up was built on the cheap, and it showed. Why would prospective Cummins engineers from MIT, say, who could work anywhere, want to raise families in a small town they'd never heard of with bad-looking schools? J. Irwin had a business problem and a community problem. To solve them, he and his Cummins Foundation made the school board an offer they could not refuse.
The offer was, if the school system would pick an architect from a list of 5 that would be provided by the foundation, then the foundation would pay the architect's fees.
It meant 10% of the costs would be paid by Cummins, not taxpayers. Plus, there'd be quality buildings, and the choices would be made by public officials. The first new school turned out so well, the school board wanted the deal again. So did other public authorities, and Will Miller says they keep coming. It's an ongoing process and completely voluntary. Question: think living with good architecture affects your behavior, your outlook on life?
I've always made a distinction between building sculpture and architecture. If it's space that physically encloses a human activity and functions at a reasonable level, but has no capacity to elicit from you a desire to go further, think spiritually, worry about your fellow man, then it's just a building. If it's an enormously elaborate, beautiful, moving space that you can inhabit, but it was designed as a symphony hall and you can't hear the orchestra in the back, then it's large-scale sculpture. Architecture, to me, is that fantastic combination of the two where it enhances and encloses human activity, but it actually inspires you to do better.
At a Cummins plant just outside of town, doing better is a theme posted on workstation wall signs. One in the ladies' room says treating people with dignity and respect is a core value at Cummins, and there are signs about safety, health. 500 mid-sized diesel engines are assembled here every day for Dodge Ram pickups, mostly, by some 500 workers. There are 5,000 Cummins workers in this country, 44,000 worldwide. We're talking an $18 billion business here. This assembly line looks like Santa's workshop.
Just stay within these two lines.
Oh, these two?
Yes,
Whoa. The
green and the black.
You have to be skinny around here.
You're fine.
The place is full of air compressors, engine blocks, pistons, things this former English literature major cannot fathom. But the handsome modern plant is shiny and new. And there are great sounds. Business is good right now for Cummins. In years past, there have been layoffs, then comebacks.
So this is the end of the assembly line, huh?
Yes. So actually, we'll go around this way, and the assembly line actually...
Over on 2nd Street, at the Republic newspaper building, Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill Architects, 1971, Harry McCauley, associate editor and county historian, has spent 46 years in Columbus. McCauley appreciates the old-fashioned Cummins values as well as the newfangled architecture, but...
I think sometimes people in Columbus take themselves too seriously. And they, for instance, look upon J. Irwin Miller as this marvelous benefactor, which he undoubtedly was, but I think he was a businessman. And so many of the things that have been done have had a dual result. It's benefited the community, no question, but it's also benefited the company.
Attractive living space for a top workforce.
And I think that it's a win-win for everybody.
Architecture, engines, philosophy, values. Nice, but you can't leave Columbus, Indiana without a stop at Zaharico's Ice Cream Parlor. Built in 1900, restored in 2009, with brass chandeliers, dark woodwork, marble counters, not to mention the self-playing organ and the hot fudge sauce, poured out by 71-year-old Wilma Hare.
Do you call yourself a soda jerk here?
No, I just call myself a jerk, but that's okay.
Isn't it funny to have an old-fashioned, wonderful place like this in this town with all this modern stuff?
This is the past, and I'm strong in the past. I mean, there's good things in the past. There was bad, but there's good things in the past, and we need to hang on to the good things.
And what do you think about all the new building, the new architecture, the recent people?
Don't get me started.
In Columbus, Indiana, there's discussion and dispute about pretty much everything, especially a new building. It's a community, after all, full of democratic, small d, opinions. Wilma Hare has spent most of her life in this town. She plunks a maraschino cherry on top of the whipped cream, on top of the caramel sauce, on top of the vanilla ice cream, smiles, and glances out the parlor windows at the passing parade of neighbors and visitors. You can see photos from Columbus and tell us about your favorite small-town arts destinations at npr.org.